Feel free to reach out and connect with us by visiting our streaming website, satsunglive.com.au. The podcast is so great to listen to, but there's nothing like the feeling of watching it live with the entire ASHRAM community all over the world, the global satsang.
Which is what we're doing tonight. And don't forget that you can join us next Saturday at Satsang to officially celebrate Baba Muktananda's birthday.
Now we're going to do 54 goddess mantras to pray to the goddess to alleviate the world situation. And also, tomorrow, we celebrate Mother's Day. I forgot to find out whether that's only in Australia or if it's global. I'm not sure. You'll have to tell me later. But we do celebrate Mother's Day tomorrow in Australia. And so in honor of all the mothers and the mother of the universe, may she have mercy on us. Let's do the mantras. They're Om Aim Rim Klim Krim Shrim Dum Parashakye Namaha. And they all evoke different aspects of the Divine Mother. So let's do that now. Chant this way.
Oh, my brim, quim, quim, sing, dum,
Welcome everyone to tonight's satsang. And I always begin by remembering and quoting my guru, Baba Muktananda, who began every talk by saying in Hindi, Sabko bare sanmane ke saath prem se hardik swagat. With great respect and love, I welcome you all with all my heart. And he'd always say that that's the essence of spirituality, to truly welcome another person with love. He would say that that's his practice, his worship, and that the form of God that he most adored was the human form of God, because God dwells within every person. So in that spirit, I want to welcome you all, and those of you who are here in the room with me, and we're, if you're watching from Mars or Jupiter, you'll be surprised to know we're in complete lockdown here. And so the ashramites are here with me, but on the global satsang, many people are watching around the world. And Girish and Ishwari mentioned a few in America, didn't she? She mentioned Chandralekha and Gaudi, but she left out a few. So now I feel a terrible burden of mentioning. I don't want to leave out. Bob was there in New York, and Jacqueline and Jessica, and in Ann Arbor, Atmananda Ji and Kashi Ama, And in Illinois, Susie and John are there, and in Detroit, Charvani is there. And that's just in and Godie and Mark in Canada. And also in the UK, and Taiwan, and Serbia, and Germany, Japan. I won't mention everybody. And all over Japan, what do you call this place we're in? Australia, mate. In Australia, all over Australia, in Adelaide, South Australia, in Queensland, in New South Wales. Special hello to Marcello, who's watching for the first time, who I knew in Baba's day, from Canberra, and all around Melbourne, and around Victoria, and lots of people watching locally around the Mornington Peninsula. That's Rosebud and Frankston and Mount Eliza and Seaford and all those kinds of places. So I want to welcome all of you to tonight's satsang. So tonight, as Girish and Ishwari mentioned, did they mention that they've become one person? Did they mention that? They have Girish and Ishwari, so they're Girishwari. They share the ish. As they mentioned, we're celebrating Baba's birthday on May 16th, which falls out on a Saturday. That's his calendar day. And we in the West celebrate things on the day, the number, the day of the month that they were born. But of course, in India, as in many other cultures, they celebrate the phase of the moon. So Baba has two birthdays, as we all do, actually, but one is the lunar and one is the solar. And so Baba's lunar birthday was on Thursday. So in a way, this whole 10-day period is a celebration of Baba's birthday. So this is the chota, the small birthday celebration today. And then next week will be the official birthday. But as far as I'm concerned, I celebrate Baba's birthday every day of the year. And so it's great. A couple of quotes. The great Abhinavagupta, one of the great sages, medieval sages of Kashmir Shaivism, in actuality, he gave Kashmir Shaivism the shape that it arrives at us today. He gave it that form, called it the Trika. But he said, even though the master of the universe always shines in us as ourself, nevertheless, his nature is not recognized in its transcendence and its sovereignty. The heart is not full of the plenitude of light. So according to the doctrine of recognition, Shaivism, the Pratibhijna doctrine, God is always there. The self is always there, but we don't recognize him. I loved this model when I first came across it, that it wasn't something I had to build slowly, some vague thing that I had to build to. Maybe I'd get there, maybe I wouldn't, but it was already with me. It was already with me. I just had to discover it. And I discovered that in Shaivism, there are millions of pointers to that place in us where that divinity shines. Abhinavagupta says, but when the soul becomes aware of the true freedom of the self and of its liberation from this life, perfection will be attained. That's a summary of the doctrine of recognition. All we have to do is recognize our divinity. But it's not just a conceptual thing like, oh, I'm divine, or you're divine. It's to really connect to the experience of that divinity. And for that, we have to penetrate through layers of separation and ignorance and contraction. And apropos of Baba's birthday, the Guru Gita says, Shri Guru Paramam Rupam, Shri Guru Paramam Rupam, Viveka Chakshuso Mritam, Mandabhagya Napasyanti, Anda Suryo Dayam Yata. The supreme form of Shri Guru is nectar to one who has the eye of discrimination. Those who are unfortunate cannot perceive this, just as the blind cannot see the sunrise. That's why in Sufism they call it an open secret, hidden in plain view. The truth is hidden in plain view. That's why we need recognition. That's why we need the awakening. Once we're awakened, we can see that divinity. And if we have the eye of wisdom, we see the guru is an access point to that divinity. But if we see with the mundane eye, just the person, and we don't get anything from it. So the Guru Gita says, see with the eye of wisdom and understand that. So tonight, Baba, these are some question answers and excerpts from Baba on tour. Baba on his Western tours in America, Europe. Do we have some pictures? There. There's Baba. He always looks spiffy when he's in the West, with collared shirts, and his beard is very well trimmed, and he wears a hat like that, and his ash is very beautifully arrayed, and his bindi is excellent. And so there he is. Always looks beautiful, but you can see that he's in the West. Next. Yeah, that's, my memory serves me right, that's in Sydney, Australia, in the 1974 tour. I remember the chair. And I was right there, just off camera. Next. And here's Baba. I think he's flying in to, probably into Fallsburg. Although it could be some like Tasmania or somewhere, but I think it's in Fallsburg. Small plane. Yeah. Next, is that it? Okay. So these are question answers from his tours. Baba made three tours of the West. The first one was very short, and it was in 1970. And he was busy touring the West while I was touring the East for him. I left America almost the same day, possibly the same day, that he left India on his first world tour. But he got back to India long before I got to, or somewhat before I got there. His second tour was much longer. It was a two-year tour, and that was the one that I accompanied him on. And then his third world tour was from 78 to 80. And by that time I was running ashrams in LA and then later here in Australia. Question, Baba, you always talk about the awakening. What is this awakening and how can we wake up? Baba says, it's absolutely true. You must wake up from your dream. The state you call your waking state is not the true waking state. Ponder this a bit. When you're happy in your life, you think it's real. You behave as though you might if you were sleeping and someone were trying to wake you. You say, wait a minute, I'm having a beautiful dream and I don't want to wake up until it's over. When you're having a pleasant dream, you have no desire to wake up. And thus you get into the habit of dreaming more and more dreams. But remember this, whether they are joyful or painful, all dreams are the same. Because once you wake up, they no longer exist. It's futile to hope for the attainment of joy through your dreams. Unreality has no value. It's only a means of devaluing life. So Baba's taking the Vedantic point of view there, that this life that we lead is a dream. We dream it. We dream it. And our hope is we make it a good dream. We're totally invested in making our dream good, include the right, you know, house and relationship and the whole thing. And we try to make the dream perfect. But he's saying, that's superficial. All dreams are the same. They're just dreams. They're not the truth. That it's okay to be involved in stuff of life, but we should also go deeper and know the truth behind that. Baba says, the great being Brahmananda said, Brahmananda was a poet saint. He said, oh man, wake up. Oh dear one, wake up. Wake up, run away from the world, which is like the net of a dream. So Dante, see your own self. Love the guru's feet. Take refuge in the guru, which represents the higher truth. Turn away from externals. Know the truth. You must awaken from the darkness of mundane life, which is like a profound slumber. That speaks to me. I love that sentence. Awaken from the darkness of mundane life. I love that word, mundane. It suggests to me something just dry and boring with no energy in it. Just a dull round going on and on, repetitive behavior. But sometimes life seems like that. But if we dug a little deeper, we'd find there's a vibrancy, an aliveness that's hidden behind that. And that's where the awakening is. He says, there's only one way to rouse yourself from this interminable sleep. This is Baba speaking. And that is to see your own self. Kabir wrote, Satguru Alak Lakaya, the Satguru has revealed the invisible to me. I love that too. The Satguru has revealed the invisible to me. I think most of us here can say that. What was before invisible has become visible. What you might read about in a scripture has become actual, palpable. The unseen world, that has become visible through the Guru's grace. He says, through the Guru's grace, Baba says, awake to the remembrance of your own self. Life is composed of the petty desires of worldliness and nothing more. Do not become involved in them. This is very intense for Baba, very Vedantic. Whatever you do, do it consciously. Do not lose your awareness. The day will certainly come when you will awaken to the self. And then the entire world will be illumined. If the world looks dull and mundane to you, it's because you are dull and mundane. Sorry to say that. But that's what the teaching is, that we see it filtered to our own awareness. So when we know the self, the whole world looks full of vibrancy. Baba says, actually, it's already illumined, but when you attain that light, you'll experience it as your own. So that's great. I think that questioner got more than he bargained for there. Question. I experience a lot of pain in life and also in sadhana, spiritual practice. I don't know how much more I can take. What is that? That's a whinge, isn't it? That's what we say in Australia. We say, it's a whinge. I can't even remember if that word exists in the West. They say that in America? They say whine. I don't know. It must be English too, whinging. Baba says, if you truly perceive and experience pain, if you befriend it and examine it closely, you will thank God as much for pain as for joy. That's an extraordinary statement, Baba. But it suggests one method which is, instead of running away from present experience, even if it's painful, sit with it, inquire into it, examine it, see what it's made of. And then it becomes much less painful, and we get to the bottom of it. Baba says, but if you do not have the right view of pain, you will complain not only about pain, but about happiness as well. And people complain. People who are addicted to complaining complain no matter what. And even if 98% of their life is good, they'll still complain. And you might point out that your life is good. Look at this and this. And they won't like that about you at all. They'll complain about you. You don't understand them. A great Sufi saint said, unless you pass through pain, you will not achieve happiness. That reminds me of Gurdjieff's concept of intentional suffering. He said, he would say that life is full of suffering, as the Buddha said. He said, but when you submit yourself to a yogic discipline, that's intentional suffering. That's you're putting yourself through something. Yes, a discipline is difficult, but it's for a good purpose. When you live, now we're involuntarily trapped. Everyone in the world is trapped. The great yogi in the sky is laughing because everyone is forced to be a yogi and in lockdown. But when you take it on intentionally, that's intentional suffering. You do it for, it's not real suffering, actually. You do it for self-knowledge and for upliftment. He says, a person who has not seen the blackness of night can never see the light of day. That light is concealed behind night's darkness. Therefore, be thankful for night. I don't know if you can be thankful for it, but it's true that that suffering and difficulty deepens us. And to truly solve the koan of life, you have to be able to go deeper no matter what's going on in your life, especially in those times when you're being tested. A perfect life, Baba says, is one in which there is no complaining. When all complaining ceases, the mind becomes utterly pure and surrenders completely to the self. A life with no complaining. Sometimes we not only complain to others, we complain to ourselves. A big complaint. And so if you could, with great strength, face whatever difficulty there is without complaining, without feeling sorry for yourself, it would be very good, because complaining is a shakti leak. You lose a lot of energy. You diminish yourself by complaining. Instead, be strong and find the solution within. This is what Baba is talking about. Here's another complaint. Question, you always emphasize discipline and self-control in sadhana. I fear I'm lacking in that. What can I do? Well, that's not really a complaint. He's having a worry about it. Yes, Baba, that's the thing. Baba says, Baba's kind here. Baba says, I think you have more capacity than you think you have. If you do not observe self-control in sadhana, you might as well give up the desire to attain the goal. And now here's what Baba means by self-control. He used to emphasize that so much. And of course, there's an external discipline. Your life can be disciplined and so on and orderly. But he means something more subtle. He says, knowledge alone can do nothing for you. And although meditation is necessary, by itself, it cannot help you achieve anything. In order to make the mind mindless, you must give up your chronic habits, which are the cause of your troubles and therefore of your complaints. So there's the theme. So discipline is to give up, to perceive those negative tendencies and to give them up. have to see them first. The tendency to complain, feel sorry for yourself, among others, and then give them up. He says, in yoga, meditation, worship, prayer, and all other spiritual techniques, you must begin by looking within. This is the significance of those practices. Make yourself manifest. Talk to yourself. I would take that very seriously. Talk to your own self. Baba would say, talk to your mind. Talk to the self. Go inside and speak to yourself. Say, hey, self, show yourself. Hey, mind, quiet down. Give me a break. Shut up. Don't give me more tearing thoughts. Oh, mind. Oh, self. Literally, do that. He says, make yourself manifest. Talk to yourself. And remember not to let your mind wander here and there, even momentarily. It doesn't matter if the mind thinks of many things. What's dangerous is when it goes down the wormhole of self-hatred and fear and worry and tearing thoughts. That's the problem. If it's just looking around the world and this and that, that's all right. It's when it's a bring down, when it brings you down, a negative tendency. Do not make it easy for your mind to harbor strange fantasies. Do not be its accomplice. Do not listen to its instructions. Don't dance to the mind's tune. Make the mind obey you. Tell the mind what to do. If the flow of negative thoughts ceases even briefly, if the waves of the mind stop for just a moment, God will instantly manifest within. Now you keep wandering, but when you become free of negative thoughts, you'll find him without searching. You'll become one with him. You will have to work hard to free yourself from negative thinking, because the mind is ancient and is trapped in the meshes of habit. The mind has become one with its habits, and it must be set free. So that's what we have. This is what our karma is. Our karma is nothing but the tendencies of our mind. And they're stubborn. We have to penetrate them. And when they're not healthy, we have to reject them and work on them. And sometimes you have to build up to it. And that's why meditation and mantra repetition strengthen the mind. So one day you can just say, no, I'm not going down on that. The mind comes in and says, hey, man, you're a loser. And you say, what do the Christians say? Get thee behind me, Satan. Shut up. Just say, shut up. Say this, come on. Shut up. Shut up. Tell your mind, shut up. You're the boss. You're not the mercy. Anything the mind thinks of and brings you down, you're miserable. You're always pursued by your habits. The strength of your mind ties you to old habits and makes you merge with them, so it becomes impossible to tell the difference between you and your habits. Because you become one with your habits, they follow you lifetime after lifetime. You can tell from Baba that he's a person who looked at himself completely. And after Shaktipat, he had a vision of his own self, and he saw these habits, and he worked against them. He struggled with them. However, if you make the right kind of effort, Baba says, you can certainly become free of them. So we all have to do that battle. But as the great beings say, we don't believe it, but we have the great power on our side. I know when I started out, I thought, this is a task way over my head. My tendencies are too powerful. I never can overcome them, because we think our tendencies are stronger than God, but it's not true. God is stronger than our tendencies. So you get a lot of help when you work on it. So now I have a little piece that's I think is wonderful. And Bob is talking about the value of satsang. I think Gil Shinishwari mentioned the value of satsang, and I always love to talk about the value of satsang. And, you know, to give him credit, I'm not a big fan of Adi Dhavabhasa, but he gave an exquisite articulation of this principle. He wrote a book called The Method of the Siddhas, and basically the method of the siddhas is satsang. Satsang is the method of siddhas. That's why I value satsang so much. And here's what Baba says about that. Nanak Dev said, and Nanak, Guru Nanak, is the founding guru of the Sikh lineage, which is a lineage of gurus. He says, the guru gave me the knowledge that the inside and the outside are one. I love all the different ways they express that. I don't know if you'd say that, but what did the guru give you? The knowledge that the inside and the outside are one. That's an interesting way of saying it. Yes, I could agree with that. Not the way I'd say it. That the inner and the outer, that the outer is a manifestation of the inner. Anyway, Baba says, that's not his point. Baba says, keep the company of the guru. The term satsang is very powerful and important to understand. It originated in India to describe the company of holy people and saints. Having satsang means being with the guru or being close to him. But more than this, it means becoming one with the self of the guru. To merge with the guru is to become perfect within one's own self. This is to have the awareness of the oneness of the self, the sense of the self, the feeling of purnoham, I am perfect. And satsang is whenever we keep in mind that connection. We keep the guru in mind, we keep the mantra in mind, we keep the teachings in mind. Whenever we keep that in front of us, then we're in satsang. We come here, we're having satsang, and I love to have satsang with all the, my favorite satsang is with Baba, of course, but all the great saints that we bring in, we're having satsang with them. And we're remembering a part of ourselves. When you have satsang, you emphasize and remember a part of yourself that very often we forget. So when we come together in satsang, we come only for that part of ourselves, the divine part, not the ego part, not the limited part, but for that reason. Baba goes on, scientists make use of catalysts in their work. I can hear Baba saying, catalyst. A catalyst is a substance that causes other substances to change without itself changing. The guru acts as a catalyst. He does not have to do anything to experience he doesn't have to do anything. To experience his effect, you merely have to be in his presence, bathed in the radiance of the guru's self. So I've written about it, really, that at some point I understood that just being with Baba was it. And I had to make it possible. I had to enable that. So I talked about in my book, I talk about the marathoner's pace. I made it so that I could stay there. There's ways of burning yourself out. There are all kinds of ways of driving yourself. I realized I could drive myself away from Baba by all kinds of choices that I made, by striving too much and burning myself out, or for getting into an argument with him over nothing and driving myself away. But I decided I wanted to be there for the long haul. And that was the essential thing, just to be in the company. He says, bathe in the radiance of the guru's self. Come to him and be immersed in his experience of oneness. For a moment, become his companion and journey to the realm where he roams. Bathe for a while in the holy river of his love and understand that when you do this, everything is accomplished. You are perfect. You are the truth. Kabir wrote, Karo Satsang Gurudeva say, keep the company of the Guru. God becomes one with the person who's drunk the nectar of satsang, who has great love for satsang, and who through satsang has attained the kingdom of the supreme state of liberation. I also felt that Baba's perfection became mine if I hung out with him. I lived in that perfection. Baba says, pardon me, there may be many great sadhanas for attaining God, but satsang is the most sublime. It bears fruit instantly. In fact, all sadhanas bear fruit because of it. Through satsang, one's desires are fulfilled. One learns to meditate ceaselessly on the Supreme Self, and then does not have to do any other sadhana. Hang out. Knowers of the truth, great yogis, and enlightened beings with equal vision have satsang and become serene. Such beings have become divorced from pride. As a result of satsang, they've washed away all their sins, and by hearing the great statements made during satsang, have forever banished their doubts. Keep the company of those saints. When your faith in satsang increases, liberation will come looking for you. I also say in my book that how I spent time with the great being Nimkaroli Baba. And Nimkaroli Baba was an avadut. He didn't have a teaching, really. And he just hung out. And it was much too sophisticated for my understanding at that point. I thought, well, this dude is great. A lot of love here. But, you know, I'm not learning anything. So I wanted to go to someone who would teach me methods and techniques. And so I did, but I didn't understand that. I mean, it was my destiny to be with Baba, but, you know, this was offered and I couldn't grasp it. So he was offering satsang in its pure form, just satsang. Little chanting, little chai, hang out, attain the self. It was over my head. Because, as Baba says, being with the Guru is a great art. Great art. He must be very intelligent. So many traps, so many ways of being pulled away and having your doubts come up and all kinds of things. You must possess great courage and contentment. Courage. The tests that come, you have to be able to pass them. Contentment. You get restless inside what's happening, what's going to happen, what am I going to do? And restlessness comes up. Although laziness, desires, and lack of faith may besiege you, you should never ask for anything. The question of asking should not even arise. For if you ask for something, it will take you far away from the Guru. So you just say, stay with him, requesting nothing. This is a very high bar that Baba is describing. Do not wonder when you'll attain the truth. Pray, meditate, and wait patiently with love. Learn to forget yourself in meditation. Satsang is very mysterious. If you simply stay in the Guru's company with great care, the right time will eventually come, and then you'll attain perfection. Everything has its own season for ripening, and yours will also arrive. When the Guru's glance of grace and compassion falls on you, you will become ripe. This is the most exquisite articulation of this principle, I think, in anything Baba's said or wrote. He says, the Guru is a burning flame. That flame lacks nothing, nor is it diminished when it lights an unlit wick. Even if thousands of flames are lit from it, it's not affected. When you want to light a candle, you bring another flame and the unlit wick. You bring together a flame and the unlit wick. As you bring them closer and closer, a leap occurs and the wick is lit. This takes only a fraction of a second. the moment for you to become something will come sooner or later, and then there need only be a leap. Therefore, have satsang at the guru's feet. It is Brahman who exists in the form of the guru. Bhava says, the only way to attain satsang is to surrender yourself. You must leave the future of your sadhana to the guru. That's very difficult because we always, when is this going to happen? When is that going to happen? Just surrender it. Let it carry you. Give up the desire to become something. Because if you enclose yourself in your own desire, your sense of individuality will prevent the guru's shakti from entering you. Because with the picture we have diminishes what's possible. It's the ego. Let the shakti penetrate you. Become simple, or you'll remain bound. To come to the guru, you must be worthy, but if you have a pure heart and inner faith, your delusion will flee at the mere sight of him. Look at him well. When your eyes meet his, you'll have the vision of your own inner self. So, isn't that sensational? That's about it. That's all you need to know in this life, in my book. So, satsang. And when we have satsang here, we have satsang with Baba, we have satsang with Bhagavan Nityananda, we have satsang with the Buddha, with Jesus, and with all the great beings who've touched that place. Because there's only that satsang, satsang with the truth and the highest consciousness. And so the best way to get into that exalted company is to hang out with a great being. And then we become initiated into that company. So let's meditate. And we'll meditate for 10 minutes. And what the great beings say is that that self, that consciousness, is perfectly alive, perfectly awake in every one of us. And here in satsang, we feel the current of that energy, of that divine spanda, that shakti. So get connected, connect to that divine power, and let it permeate you, and let it reveal itself more and more until it suffuses your whole being. It's a very real experience and a very real energy. So open to it, and we'll meditate now on the self for 10 minutes. And remembering Baba's birthday, which we'll remember for the next 10 days, I welcome you all with great respect and love. Satguru Nath Maharaj Ki Jai. Let's meditate now for 10 minutes.